In the vibrant Jewish community of 1936 Salonika, Greece, 11-year-old Niko Crispus stands out with his wavy blonde hair and sparkling blue eyes. Known as Shoni, Snow, for his untouched purity, Niko possesses an inherent honesty that defines him. During a children's game, he admits being tagged rather than claiming victory, a small moment revealing his deep-rooted truthfulness. His grandfather Lazar teaches him that God is always watching, instilling values that shape his identity. Beyond his honesty, Niko possesses remarkable talents, facility with languages, artistic ability, and natural charm. During his aunt's Jewish wedding celebration, 7-year-old Niko dances while his grandparents are hoisted on chairs. Lazar teaches him about Jewish tradition as connection to identity, declaring, "You are a Jew first, then a Greek." What makes this world so poignant is how it exists on the edge of destruction. When Lazar takes Niko, his brother Sebastian, and cousin Fanny to visit Salonika's massive Jewish cemetery, he teaches them about chesed shel emet, a true loving kindness done for someone who can never repay you. The children clean not only their great-grandparents' graves, but also those of strangers, walking home together in autumn sunshine, unaware that within months the entire cemetery would be destroyed. The Nazis dismantled Jewish life in Salonika with terrifying precision. In January 1943, officials forced the Crispus family from their smoke shop without allowing them to take even coats. Religious practice was targeted next. Nazi soldiers blocked synagogues, declaring, "No church today, Jew." When a soldier questioned Niko's blonde hair, Lazar quickly led the children away. They continued worshiping at the harbor as a final act of resistance. Germans then gave the family just 5 minutes to evacuate their home. They were marched through streets while some residents mockingly waved goodbye, then herded into the barren Hirsch Quarter, enclosed by barbed wire with death threats for escape attempts. By March 1943, nearly all 56,000 Salonika Jews had been forced into this ghetto. The destruction of the Jewish cemetery, with tombstones repurposed for roads and pools, symbolized the erasure of Jewish existence. Each escalating step normalized the next atrocity, showing how societies can be led toward unimaginable cruelty when truth becomes the first casualty. The Nazis' most insidious strategy was the lie of resettlement, a fabrication promising Jews a homeland when they were actually being sent to death camps. This deception prevented resistance by fostering false hope. In the barren Hirsch ghetto, this lie spread rapidly. The night before deportation, many Jews held hasty weddings after hearing married couples would receive priority housing. 15-year-old Sebastian reluctantly married 16-year-old Rivka, heartbroken over his true love, Fanny. The central tragedy involves Niko, discovered by Nazi officer Udo Graf after separation from his family. Seeing potential in the Aryan-looking Jewish boy, Udo manipulates Niko into becoming his unwitting accomplice in spreading the resettlement lie. When Niko spots his family and tries to join them, Udo cruelly reveals, "There are no new homes, you stupid Jew." Yet he keeps Niko from boarding the death train. This transformation, a truthful child becoming the voice of history's greatest deception, shows how totalitarian systems corrupt innocence. After abandoning truth on the Salonika railroad tracks, 13-year-old Niko transforms both physically and morally. With a stolen Nazi passport, he begins reinventing himself, learning that survival requires becoming someone else. When Niko meets Romani forger Papo, he's captivated by identity creation. Papo warns, "Some lies are easier to believe than the truth," a philosophy guiding Niko as he travels through Yugoslavia into Hungary, assuming various personas: student, apprentice, musician, and eventually a German soldier. In Budapest, actress Catalin Karate sees through his disguise, but values his acting ability. After her arrest, Niko continues alone, perfecting deception. By January 1945, when he reaches Auschwitz with Russian liberators, he's Filip Gorka, a Polish Red Cross worker, no longer the innocent Salonika boy, but a survivor skilled in necessary deception. Finding his grandfather Lazar in the Auschwitz infirmary, skeletal and blind, Nico maintains his false identity and abandons him. Haven't we all created versions of ourselves to survive difficult circumstances? Nico's transformation is extreme, but the impulse is recognizably human. Decades after the war, trauma continues shaping our characters' lives. Sebastian obsessively hunts Nazis, Fanny attempts to rebuild, and Nico, now a wealthy Hollywood financier, remains haunted by his deceptions. Despite success, Nico's nights are tormented by war memories, shootings at the Danube, Auschwitz, and faces of Jews he betrayed. Dependent on sleeping pills, he lives in luxury yet fundamentally disconnected from his true self. Sebastian and Fanny's marriage fractures under divergent trauma responses. He relocates them to Vienna to work with the Nazi hunter against her wishes. As he prioritizes hunting war criminals over family, their relationship collapses. Each carries survivor's guilt. Sebastian for his silence during Nico's evacuation, Fanny for surviving when others perished, and Nico through anonymous financial support while avoiding his own complicity. The central question persists: was Nico victim or collaborator? His wealth cannot erase the fundamental rupture in his identity. 40 years post-war, the characters reconnect through chance. Fanny, now in San Francisco after leaving Sebastian, follows a man resembling Nico to a Jewish cemetery where he cleans tombstones, echoing their childhood ritual in Salonika. When Fanny becomes a film projectionist, she discovers her employer is indeed Nico, now living as Nathan Nate Gudili. They work together, maintaining the kindness of silence, coexisting without disturbing their shared past. Sebastian works for the Nazi hunter in Vienna. After spotting Udo Graf, now George Mecklen, working for American intelligence, at a Chicago neo-Nazi rally, Sebastian obsessively gathers evidence against him, though no one believes a high-ranking Nazi has found refuge in America. The narrative culminates with a commemoration march in Salonika, marking the 40th anniversary of the first train to Auschwitz. This event, championed by Sebastian to honor Greek-Jewish victims, becomes a siren song, drawing all four characters back to their origin point. Isn't it strange how the past refuses to stay buried? At the Salonika commemoration, all four characters converge. Sebastian speaks about Jewish suffering while Fanny and her daughter join the march. Disguised with a white wig, Udo waits with a concealed gun, targeting Sebastian. As Sebastian approaches the microphone, snowflakes fall, echoing Nico's childhood nickname, Chione. Suddenly, Nico appears and throws himself in front of Sebastian as Udo fires, taking two bullets meant for his brother. Cradling his dying brother, Sebastian learns the truth. Nico had lied to save their family, believing Graf's promise of reunion. Sebastian's anger dissolves as Nico reveals he kept Graf's Nazi papers as evidence. As Nico dies, a boxcar mysteriously moves along the tracks, stopping with open doors. Nico smiles tearfully, as if seeing loved ones waiting, then dies, forgiven at last. Nico's fortune went to Holocaust survivors' families. Udo escapes initially, but is later poisoned on a train by Fanny, who declares herself finally free after bearing witness.